joined the call. So welcome to the March edition of the Blue Waters User Monthly Web Conference. Slight change to some of the agenda items here. So we'll start off with overview of the recent system events that have taken place on Blue Waters, and then we'll move on to some recent changes that have taken place. Some of those have been sent out by email notification to users, and a few of the other ones are ones that we haven't sent out notification but are useful to know about. Then we'll move on to a very simple brief discussion about moving data to Nearline. That's something that we are working on, and just want to give you a brief update, but nothing substantial there. We'll talk about some upcoming activities with Darshan, that was also highlighted in the recent email. And then Scott Lathrop's here, Professor of Science and Access Information. And then Scott will give us some discussion about upcoming events. Bill can tell us about the symposium, there's Blue Waters internships, extreme scaling workshop, and the Exceed Working Conference. Right. and maybe one thing we'll bring up is one thing we had a discussion here, and people can think about it, is calendar notifications for Blue Waters calls. I've been sending out ICS files attached to the emails, and if people find that's a useful way to add entries to their calendar, that's great. If people have recommendations for other methods for adding in, entries in people's calendars, we are working on an RSS feed for the calendar on the Blue Waters portal, but that's still not available. All right, so moving on, probably the issue that many people want to discuss a bit is the recent system event that took place earlier last week. We had an issue on the 9th of March where a single OST on a scratch file system had an issue. We don't really have a firm understanding of the root cause. That's something that's going to come up later, but we focused initially on recovery of user data. So the vendors worked around the clock and starting the moment it happened to understand what they can do and how to do that. So initially we resolved to get people access to their data, so we did get when their data will be available. Had a few users who hadn't backed up their data during the period of time, and there was a possible chance for loss of data for some users. Initially, users were notified that they were impacted by the OST issue by the presence of a scratch by a file in their home directory, and we recommended users to take a look at that file, look and see what was there, and not to touch the files that are in there, or you could remove them if they were impacting your ability to continue running this week. Recently, as Friday, some significant progress was made, and we started the process of actually migrating user files off of the affected OSP. That process is still ongoing and will most likely be resolved by the end of the day today. Over the weekend, started notifying users who had asked about the status of some files and asking them to check that their files were available, as we showed that their files had been migrated off that OSP. We did start to learn that some files would not be recoverable. A very small percentage of the files, user files, were appearing as unrecoverable, and we've contacted some of the users regarding those files. Some of the files that were migrated are appearing to be what we would call damaged. There might be some missing data within them. Those files will be moved into users' scratch directories. We will announce a location for that directory probably later today. And users are encouraged to take a look at those files to see whether or not there's content within those files that's useful. If there isn't, those files will be, you can just delete those files or you can let the policy remove them as well. For files that were successfully migrated and didn't appear to have any damage within them, as from our point of view, from what we were able to see, we are recommending that users take a look at those files and check the integrity of those migrated files. If you're able to restart off those files and calculate numbers reproduce runs that would agree with the results from the results generated from those restart files, for example. Or if you happen to implement a checksum type method in the dumping and restarting process of your application, then you can confirm that the restart, the files that were migrated successfully. So far, we haven't had confirmation of any files that were successfully migrated that didn't appear damaged, actually showed any lack of data integrity. We have working with one user on a possible file that shows that, but we're trying to narrow down what the actual signature is for that file. So by this afternoon, we'll have completed the migration process. We'll notify users, again, of the status of files. Files that are possibly damaged will be made available to them if they want to continue looking at them. And then the next step in the process is to determine the root cause of this issue. So we focused initially on the recovery process, and we didn't want to impact that recovery process by looking at what led up to the possible issue on that single OST. We like to remind users that while this is the Scratch file system, it is not, as this is the Scratch file system, it is not backed up, and that we highly recommend timely transfer of data to the nearline system. We do want users to have a good expectation that when the files are written, that they do reside long enough for users to transfer those files. So we do realize that is an issue, and we're taking as much time as we can to make sure that we always provide a reliable and trustworthy file system. All right, any questions regarding the recent system events? I see some of the users who are attending the call are people that we've had some conversations with during the week. So if there are any questions in particular that users would like to bring up, please feel free to mention them.
More less than some percent.
All right, so one item that I didn't mention, well, I said a small percentage, the number of files residing on that OST was on the order of a couple hundred thousand files, and the number of files that appeared to be unrecoverable was on the order of a thousand or two. So we are pretty... while we don't want to have any unrecoverable files, the fraction of files that were uncoverable is pretty low. I think we're still coming up with a number of files that possibly from the files that were recoverable, but that's a proportionally small number as well. So you have more. If you want to know more about that, we can provide additional information. All right. Doesn't sound like any other questions on that. All right, so Jeremy Unis is here. He's the lead of the admin group. And in the recent email, we sent out a few items about recent changes to some of the job policies that recently made. And so, Jeremy, you want to discuss those?
Yep. So these are fairly simple. The queue time factor that feeds into priority accrual has been decreased. This was to resolve an issue that has probably been present since job wall clock times have been expanded to run to 24 hours, which has been some time. That is, if a job is has been held out, blocked by even one other job, through that 24 hours, the priority accrual was growing that single job to a disproportionate amount of priority, which was thrashing the scheduler somewhat. And actually worsening the overall job throughput. So this will be an improvement to slow the priority accrual based on time. The other job policies or the accrual policies, like the priority given to larger jobs will stay in place, and the priority given by the first tier order, which is the queue that is selected, that stays in place as well. This will make queue time compete less with those factors. Another change would be the priority accrual eligibility of jobs, which is when they are considered eligible to accrue priority, has been up till now limited by the number of jobs in a queue, and this policy is going to be adjusted to be limited by the nodes that are requested. So up to 1.5 full systems worth of nodes are allowed to accrue priority at a time. This is to solve an issue, well, number one, be more fair, but also to prevent an issue where a user may have had a, with the previous policy, a number of jobs in a queue towards one resource like the XK resource, for instance, that would hit the eligibility limit, and then have other jobs that were waiting for XE nodes that were not even being considered eligible, even with available nodes. So this should resolve those that type of log jamming, as well as be a little bit more fair to different resource requirements from different users. To prevent competition within a project, the project accrual eligibility limit is 2.5 full systems worth. Within a single project, multiple users should be able to compete and accrue priority at the same time, but to a limit. Next, we have the wall clock overrun grace removal. This shouldn't affect too many people by the usage we've seen. The previous policy was 10 minutes, and we're reducing that to zero. And on top of a 24-hour run, which is typically where we see wall time incursion, this shouldn't be a big deal or even necessarily noticeable. But this will also allow the scheduler to make better predictions for job start times and not trip over its own logic to the same degree it has previously that has previously caused issues. So these changes will go in today or else early tomorrow, depending on staff availability. A future consideration also for turnaround time improvements, use of the debug queue, which we've had a few reports of longer than expected wait times, would be a small number of nodes of each resource reserved during weekdays for smaller and shorter jobs. So this would be tentatively for something like jobs that were under a couple hundred nodes and under 4 hours long only would be able to run within this reservation on just a few hundred nodes reserved for this purpose. So that may be a change that is coming before the next call, pending implementation testing. So any questions on those changes? Okay, you can go to the next slide. Another change that you may or may not have noticed on the portal regarding the node status and availability would be a more detailed explanation as to node idle time, and it's more broken down. The node usage pie used to be just nodes in use or nodes idle, and it didn't really reflect why nodes were held idle. For example, if a large job was coming up and the system was being drained for it, that was not necessarily obvious or apparent by the previous representation. Now we are collecting information as to why nodes are idle and attempting to represent that within this nodes used by as well.
Excuse me, have you considered putting the XE and XK nodes in separate pie charts?
That was a consideration. It was determined that that could be represented within a pie chart. Would that be a preference?
I think it would be easier to see at a glance what's going on if they were separated.
Okay, we'll note that and take that back to the table. Any other comments? Okay.
I guess we could, one thing we should mention is that the nodes idle is something that can change very quickly, so you have to balance what's going on with the draining, which means that some user has a reservation. Could be a system reservation, could be a user. Could be the schedule putting reservation on node. While nodes idle means that they're available now, no guarantee how long those nodes will be available.
That is correct.
It's kind of similar to looking at the backfill feature of Moab, where you can say show backfill for a certain node count, and it says it's available at this time for a certain length of time. We can't guarantee that those nodes will be available when by the time you get over to the terminal and change your submit a job at that particular site. But it is useful to note that the system might be underused. In fact, if you go to the machine status page and scroll down to the ribbon chart at the bottom, and you happen to see utilization being low for a sustained period of time, then there's a high likelihood that the available nodes are available for a long enough period of time that you have a good chance of getting the job there.
It's worth noting that we are working to find a way to represent how long nodes, how long and how many different nodes in each category could be idle, so that you could potentially see what type of geometry you could target for immediate availability and backfill. To date, the scheduler has had some problems with supporting our ability to have that information available, but we're definitely targeting that for the future.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy. Any other questions regarding the infographics here available on the portal? Okay. Thanks. If you have other suggestions, like the one suggestion about representing both the XD and XK resources, feel free to drop us an email at helpusvw@ncsa.illinois.edu and let us know what your suggestions are. All right. Do you want to talk about the logging policy? Okay. So one of the other items that we did discuss in the recent email was some changes in the login node policy. since going into production, we've had occasional situation where some users have been exploiting or utilizing the resources of the login nodes. And to ensure a certain level of responsiveness of the login nodes, we have been developing a process watcher with that's configurable, and we've been trying to tune it over a period of time. And so for right now, the process watcher will be monitoring the login nodes for processes that run for a limited period of time for over 100 hours of walk clock time total, or if the processes appear to be particularly active, that the average CPU utilization of 20% or more for a period of over 4 hours would also incur termination of those processes. The users are notified by email when this happens, and it's on a per-user, per-process, per-node basis. We are open to listing different exemptions for that. So, for example, if you're doing something that requires significant compile time and you're finding that somehow it's somehow hitting these limits, then we would like to know about that. Actually, we get a copy so we do see what's going on and we can enable certain processes to be exempted. One of those processes in particular is, of course, one that's pretty common, which is the use of rsync. And we're happy for users to use rsync. We think it's perfectly fine for users to use rsync for synchronizing or transferring code, or maybe small amounts of data. But what we find is that there have been cases where users are using rsync to transfer significant amounts of data. And especially if those transfers involve compression, then the login nodes become slightly sluggish and unresponsive, especially depending on how they're hitting the data on the Lustre client on the login nodes. So we have limited rsync to not only the above restrictions enabled by the process watcher, but we've also limited rsync to one instance per user per login node. And that's for both directions. So if you happen to be on a login node and you are rsyncing with something off of Blue Waters, and then you go to another system and you want to rsync the converse direction, then you will that second rsync will not be allowed to start up. So it's for both directions. Or it's instantiated in different directions. So we do recommend Globus Online for data transfers. And hope that we know that Globus Online doesn't offer all the features of rsync, but you can hopefully, if you have some issues that you want to work with that emulate rsync within Globus Online, please let us know. All right, so we hope that these login node policies, which are documented on the portal, will help ensure high-quality login node service, because we know it's frustrating for users to be working on sluggish login nodes. Any questions about changes to the login node policy from anybody? All right. Okay, so one of the other changes that we've made come about as a result of some of the confusion of using Globus Online or moving data to the Nearline system for users who are in projects or in multiple projects. The visibility, the initial design for the Nearline setup was to emulate home and project of the Lustre file system. And that appeared to cause some confusion for some users, and we decided that it would be best to implement something that would help users identify and put data on their project space more simply. And we have enabled something similar to like the Scratch symlink for users on the online Lustre file system. This is adding links to users' project spaces on Nearline from their home directory within Nearline. The behavior is really dependent and different, a little bit different than maybe how a shell is when you move CD into a symlink. But we tried to make the symlink name identifiable so that you aren't confused, so confused where you are. So, for example, this is my particular Nearline space here, and I'm in several different projects. And if I double-click through Globus Online into project.jnf, for example, which is one of the science teams, you move into that particular subdirectory, which is a link to /project/site/jnf. So there's really two ways to go to the same endpoint here, same destination within Nearline. It seems like a rather simple thing, but it has led to some confusion. So we're hoping that by the placement of these symlinks within users' Nearline home space, that they'll find moving data to the project space to be more simple. All right. Any questions from people on the call regarding this addition to the Nearline file system setup?
Greg, how do we sell our quota in Nearline? Is that displayed in the normal quota command?
It's not yet, although there is a command for Nearline quota now, I think.
Yes.
That can be executed to query the Nearline.
For the home, for your home space. So we do have some of that information available in the portal. There is command line information being developed. Right now, the command line tool will report. It'll be added. Well, we're having a discussion of whether this will be part of the quota wrapper to Lustre, so that it gives quotas to both the online system and the Nearline system in one tool. So that's why we haven't released that yet to users. But you should be able to see most of that from the portal. If you have any questions regarding project space usage, we maintain a list that we can quickly respond to your queries. So we do realize that that's an issue, and we're close to getting that resolved. It's a matter of making things available both from the login nodes and from the portal. So we'll send that out when that tool is finalized. So the ideal thing would be a command line tool that would show both your home space on Nearline and your project space across all projects that you're a member of. All right. Any other questions regarding Nearline, changes to Nearline, recommendations? So one subject that was motivated by at least one user in particular since the OST issue on Scratch is how to easily move data within a job to the Nearline system. certainly we recommend Globus Online, and one of the methods would be using the command line interface. But we realize that there are probably some improvements to that method, and we're trying to come up with some short-term solution, which would provide an efficient way and simple way to coordinate the movement of data generated from one job. We haven't had enough time to fully test that setup, so we aren't presenting it here. But if you're interested in knowing about it, send us an email, and we'll add you to a list of users who are interested in trying out that system. We realize that it's maybe not the most straightforward way to do it, so we are starting a process to find a longer-term solution that will help users move data after a job or during a job execution. So if you're interested, please contact us and let us know, and we'll gladly add you to that topic. Okay, so one of the other additional changes that was discussed in the recent email is the availability of Darshan. So Darshan is a I/O profiling tool that's available on many HPC centers. We have the objective of making this profiling library a default library within the user's environment, so that we are able to monitor I/O application usage, get a better understanding of how different applications are doing their I/O, where we can identify applications to improve I/O on the system. So we have it available. It's documented on the BlueWatch portal now. And we are working to make this default user environment within a month. We've done some initial testing with some of the applications that we are able to work with. Most of them are PRAC applications. And today we've been pretty successful in using the I/O Darshan library for looking at application I/O performance. So a couple bullets here that are documented on the portal as well. Very low overhead, both in what you have to do to get it implemented in the library in your application, and also performance-wise, low overhead. One restriction is that in order for it to work, it has to be an MPI application. So if you have applications that aren't using MPI, you may need to add a MPI, init MPI finalize to that application if you're interested in using Darshan. And it provides per file, per process statistics. Things are aggregated into a single file. We will be collecting those files and making them available to users down the road, hopefully through the portal. But we describe within the Darshan page how to collect that information yourself and run some of the post-analysis tools that are provided by Darshan to get an idea of your application's performance. And those are highlighted on the Darshan page. There's also some information here. If you do run into problems, what you can check, do a quick checklist, and if you have any questions, of course, contact us as well. There's one caveat at the moment in that we're having some issues with shared objects, and hopefully that'll be resolved soon. All right, any questions about Darshan? All right, so this is our periodic slide. Maybe I should change it up so people aren't tired of seeing it, but we're always interested in learning in advance as early as possible about science successes coming down the pipeline. Those could be publications, insights, things that you didn't expect. We're always being asked by the NSF what users are finding. We have weekly calls with the National Science Foundation, and we'd like to give them some any highlights that we can offer that we didn't know about the previous week. So we're always trying to have a very dynamic relationship with providing information and collecting information. So if you have any publications that you haven't shared with your point of contact, if you're an NSF PRAC team, contact your POC and let them know. You can send information to me. We have a share results section on the portal as well that goes to the Public Affairs Department. And as we've been trying to mention, it's important to have proper acknowledgement within your paper. Be sure to include the API project number for the the Blue Waters project as a whole, and if you're an NSF-TREC member, be sure to include your OCIA award number as well. All right, I'd like to turn things over to Bill briefly for a quick discussion about the Blue Water Symposium.
So the symposium is, you've all received, or many people have received invitations to the symposium. Starts in the evening of May 12th with a social reception, and then runs the 13th, 14th, and 15th here in Champaign. We've gotten an excellent response so far with, last I heard, 70 or 80 people already coming and confirmed. And as we mentioned before, we are very pleased that a number of the science teams are having their senior representatives, PIs, co-PIs, attend so we can have an engagement on multiple levels. We have keynotes planned, panels, posters, breakout sessions. There will be, from the breakout sessions, we're anticipating dealing with the three topics in some organized manner. One is about accelerated and mini-core processing requirements. Another is about data. And the third is about the future generation of blue waters and starting to accumulate requirements and thoughts about that. So we hope if you haven't already acknowledged and registered, please do so. There's not a cost to register, but there is. We very much appreciate registering so that we have the right numbers of things like food and other things. There will be two social events in addition to the opening reception. We'll share those social events with our private sector program partners who are also meeting that week in their annual meeting. And the evenings, at least, if not other things, will allow for an exchange of the industrial partners with the Blue Water Science teams.
Bill, I should note for this particular symposium, we're not going to have posters. I think that was a change that I forgot the direction for. So I'll have to make sure that gets corrected before it gets posted to the version of the portal. We do look forward to seeing everyone. Question?
So the PRAC teams are expected to give a presentation at this?
Yes, in some form. Some will be longer, some will be shorter, but yes. And also to provide a summarization of the activities over the past year.
Okay. How long are those, and when do we get the schedule?
We're working on that now. So the instructions about the write-ups and the presentations will go out, I believe, in about a week.
Okay.
No other questions about the symposium? We'll move on to the Blue Waters internships, and Scott Lathrop's here to give us an update on that.
We have a call out for students, primarily undergraduates, but also graduate students, to be involved in the internship program. This will begin with a two-week institute for students to enhance and make sure they have the requisite skills for the follow-on projects they'll be engaged in. They'll be engaged for a year-long internship, so summer, fall, spring. The call is out now for students to apply. If you know of any students that would like to participate, please spread the word. But we're also looking for mentors. So if you would like to have a student working on your research project, we'd like to hear from you as well in terms of being a mentor for these students. So we encourage you to either volunteer to be a mentor or to encourage some students to apply for this. The deadline is this Friday for the student applications. The Extreme Scaling Workshop is an ongoing collaboration between Blue Waters and Exceed. This year's workshop is going to focus on big data and large-scale computing. It will be in August in Boulder. We now have a call out for submissions, which can include either a paper, and that would be a full-length paper that would go into a proceedings to be published in the IEEE Digital Library, but we're also looking for short white papers on issues that you would like to see addressed by Blue Waters or the broader HPC community in general. So we encourage you to either submit your own interests or to spread the word to others who may be interested in participating in this. So the first step is to collect the papers and the white papers, and then we'll open up registration in May. Again, the deadline for the initial submissions is May 1st. So keep May 1st in mind. We encourage you to participate. Last year, I think we had roughly 60 people participating. We're anticipating roughly a similar size this year.
And finally?
And then we encourage you to also think about the Exceed annual conference that will be in July in Atlanta. Submissions were due March 15th, common to many other conferences. That's been extended 1 week, so the deadline is now March 24th. Based on requests from the communities. March 24th will be the absolute deadline, and this is for papers and tutorials. There are later deadlines for BOFs and other activities. There will also be financial support for campus champions and for student participation, and those calls for applications will go out later. But it's a great opportunity to come and talk about technology, science, education projects. So again, we encourage you or your students to submit posters or spread the word, and we look forward to seeing you in Atlanta in July.
All right, thanks, Scott. All right, so that really ends the list of topics for this month's webinar. I'm always looking for future topics of interest that the our partners would like to hear about. Next month, we'll have a timely discussion about Buster and application, expected IO application behavior, not behavior, proper application IO error checking is the way to phrase it. So we've had a fair number of users having, who aren't checking the status of their IO calls, and we've had a few situations where Luster behaves in a certain way which might go against particular user expectations. So we're going to have a discussion about Luster resiliency and its response to issues and how applications should interact with that. And that'll be a half-hour presentation by Kalyana Chattalavada, who's our IO application lead in our group. And that'll be for the subject for April. And we're looking for subject matter for future Blue Waters user calls. Again, thanks everyone for attending. If you have any other questions, if you want to bring them up now, that'd be great. Otherwise, send us an email, and we'll get back to you. So if there are any questions that people would like to bring up, any general open topic questions before we end the call?
Do we know who's on? We'll go around and ask if anything is there.
Okay, so we were asked here to see people who are on the call, and I have a list at least of people who are on through the AC Conference website. So I see that Brian Drew's on the call. Brian, do you have anything in particular you'd like to bring up?
Not at this time, but it was a very important call, so thank you.
Any recent things that you might be able to share with us in terms of working on the system?
I know that that the tornado simulations headed up by Bob Wilson have been very, very successful, but I don't know the immediate plans to follow up with that. So there should be more later, and there'll be I think quite a bit at the meeting in May.
Okay, great, thanks. All right, see here. I'm probably going to mispronounce the person's name, but Jae-hyuk Kwok is on the call. Do you have any items that you would like to bring up or discuss? Hopefully the person is not on mute. On mute. Okay, and I know we heard from Jim Phillips. Jim, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, thanks.
And I see Jim Fonseca's on. Jim, do you have any items you'd like to bring up for us to discuss?
No, thanks.
Okay. Thanks. Let's see. Mike Knott, would you happen to have anything you'd like to bring up or discuss with us on the call today?
Nothing in particular. I would look forward in the future usage of the nearline storage through the Globus Online. If there's tips on how to do that, especially dealing with lots of files, that would be pretty interesting.
Okay, sure. We can maybe we can add that to the next month's call. We've had a few users that have encountered some issues with excessive number of files not just on Lustre, but trying to move them into the nearline. So we can certainly discuss that.
Great. Thanks.
And one of the persons is Scott Noble, and people are starting to drop off, so lost a couple already. So, Scott, if you happen to have any items that you would like to bring up, either insights on the call from work that you've done or any items or issues that you'd like to bring to our attention?
I guess I've been working with Kaliano about the I/O issues, and so I guess I'm looking forward to hearing about the discussion. Next user call. I guess one idea I want to pose is that so you mentioned that there's some interaction between the software I/O level and the Lustre file system, and expectations not being met. And that was I guess I want to pose the idea that maybe this could happen in the library level and not offloaded to the user responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's possible. If for instance, I have problems with HDF5 and the Lustre system, and sometimes. And I was wondering if instead of it being my responsibility to loop over errors, could it be implemented in the library, so change the actual implementation of these calls.
That's a good question or a good suggestion. We've had some modest discussions regarding that, and people from different camps. So certainly within something like HDF in the library, that is something that certainly the library could consider and implement. The HDF group could look into that and behave accordingly. I guess it's a little different from the point of view of a user who calls fopen or open in Fortran, for example. There might be more of the onus might be on the programmer.
Sure.
So we'll get more into that next month, and I'll pass along your comment to Kalyana, and he can add that to his talk for next month, and certainly he's been working with the HDF group on some of those issues, especially your particular case.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for those people who stayed on the call and brought up some issues for us. We look forward to getting more broader audience at the next user call. I think the subject matter will attract more people to. So that's the end of the user call. Thanks again for joining. Mm-hmm.